Welcome. You have checked into the enigmatic Riverside Hotel. My name is Carl, and as your concierge, I will guide you through our evening entertainment. We're going to start things off today, as usual, with On This Day in History, our weekly history segment where we look at events that happened on this specific day of the year, except in the past. So we're going to start things off with on March 3, 1904, Emperor Wilhelm II of Germany becomes the first person to make a sound recording of a political document using this cylinder invented by Thomas Edison. This speech is called Hart sein im Schmerz, which translates to being strong in times of pain, and the whole thing is actually kind of awesome. It's a very philosophical and somewhat religious speech about believing in the best in people and giving your best even if there's no reward to be expected. And if you want to hear what that sounded like, well, you're in the right place because I'm going to play you an excerpt of that. In some very local history, March 3, 1919 marks the beginning of the first international airmail system, which delivered letters between Vancouver, BC and Seattle. In the cockpit were legendary airplane builder Bill Boeing and pilot Eddie Hubbard, who had purchased the plane. Hubbard continued delivering letters on this run for the next 8 years, piloting a Boeing B-1 flying boat, and in these 8 years, he put 350,000 miles on this road. The Boeing B-1, the plane that he flew, is now exhibited at the Museum of History and Industry in Seattle, so you can go check that out if you're ever in Seattle. In some musical history, on March 3, 1971, the South African Broadcasting Corp lifts its ban on the Beatles. The reason that the Beatles were ever banned in South Africa in the first place is honestly really dumb. In 1966, in an interview with the London Evening Standard, Lennon famously uttered the words, "We're more popular than the Beatles now. We're more popular than Jesus now." Initially, this didn't affect much at all, but 5 months later, an American teen magazine named Datebook republished this interview with a quote on the cover, which really drives home the power that a headline can have, especially when taken out of context. In fact, with this whole story, there's some stuff with things being taken out of context, because if you dig a bit deeper, you'll find that the full statement goes, "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue with that. I'm right and I will be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus now." That's the headline quote. "I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was alright, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me." Whilst not necessarily unreasonable, this whole statement, I feel like when it's not just the headline, it's much more understandable that this full statement would cause some controversy with certain religious folks. After all this became popularized, the Vatican issued a protest, some radio stations stopped playing their songs altogether, venues were cancelled, and hardcore Christians in the US started burning Beatles records. Lennon later explained himself in another interview from 1966, which I am going to play you next.
"If it had said we're more, television is more popular than Jesus, I might have got away with it. You know, but as I just happened to be talking to a friend, I used the word Beatles as a remote thing, not as what I think, as Beatles as though those other Beatles like other people see us. And I just said they are having more influence on kids and things than anything else, including Jesus. But I said it in that way, which is the wrong way."
Some teenagers have said, have repeated your statements that the Beatles, "I like the Beatles more than Jesus Christ." What do you think about that?
Well, originally I was pointing out that fact in reference to England, that we meant more to kids than Jesus did, or religion at that time. I wasn't knocking it or putting it down, I was just saying it as a fact. And it is true, especially more for England than here. You know, but I'm not saying that we're better or greater or comparing us with Jesus Christ as a person or God as a thing or whatever it is. You know, I just said what I said and it was wrong or was taken wrong and now it's all this.
In 1971, South Africa lifted the ban. Interestingly enough, after the Beatles had broken up, all of John Lennon's solo albums were still banned, whilst the other members weren't. In some movie news, on March 3, 2018, The Emoji Movie was named the worst film in the 2017 Razzie Awards. Interestingly enough, The Emoji Movie actually did really well at the box office, despite a 0% Rotten Tomatoes score. And the reason I'm bringing this whole thing up at all is because it's kind of evidence of a pretty skeevy marketing strategy on the side of Sony Pictures, who distributed this film. Because basically what they did was they put a review embargo, which doesn't allow critics to upload their reviews until like the very day before the movie gets released. And that way you don't have that thing where word of mouth spreads that the movie sucks, which apparently it does. I mean, it literally has 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then, yeah, like people will go into the movie not knowing, not having heard anything about its quality. Which, you know, as far as marketing strategies go, like, I get it, it makes sense. But if it's a bad movie, then, like, be honest about it. I don't know. Either way, next up, I'm going to play you a segment for my mystery show, Look Behind You. This is a segment on a self-proclaimed time traveler, which is a very interesting story in my opinion. So yeah, that'll be next here on the Enigmatic Riverside Hotel Show. You're listening to Look Behind You, your weekly mystery segment on the Enigmatic Riverside Hotel Show on CJSF 90.1 FM. In 2004, the presidential elections in the US were met with lots of backlash and controversy, which eventually escalated into civil unrest. Riots and protests became the norm, and things got worse from month to month. But 2008, things went completely off the rails, and a second American Civil War erupted. Things weren't looking much better in the rest of the world. In the Middle East, conflicts between Jews and Arabs grew more and more violent, and the 2008 Olympics had to be cancelled due to other conflicts. As a result of the war, the United States split up into five new regions. By 2012, most of the West had become unstable. The Civil War in the US went on until the year 2015, which is when a short but severe World War III started after Russia launched a nuclear strike against the United States, China, and Europe. After Washington DC is hit, Omaha, Nebraska became the new US capital. This event will go down in history as N-Day. Nearly 3 billion people were killed. That, at least, is the history of the last two decades, according to John Teeter, a self-proclaimed time traveler who posted on internet forums in the early 2000s. Welcome back to the Untitled Mystery segment here on the Enigmatic Riverside Hotel Show, which, as of today, has a name. The reason I decided for the whole Look Behind You thing is because I heard someone use that knocking sound effect that I used in the intro for this, and it scared me so much that I figured, hey, that's like the perfect thing for my mystery show. So for today, here's probably the nerdiest thing I've ever done on radio. We're gonna talk about John Teeter, an infamous case in which a man claiming to be a time traveler from the future was nice enough to tell us exactly what was gonna happen in the next 20 years. And as you can tell, he didn't get too much right, but he also has kind of a reason for that, and we're gonna break that down as well. This is one of the most famous internet mysteries, and personally, it's one of my favorites. I was 13 when I discovered the whole John Teeter story, and this was like my obsession for like a whole month. Like, I read about this every day, I thought about it all the time, I told all of my friends and family members about this, which in hindsight, I'm sorry you guys. And also, I kind of fell down the rabbit hole of this whole story again, and I'm pretty sure I may have gotten close to something that most people don't know about, so stay tuned for that. But who was this John Teeter really? which of his predictions actually holds some truth to them, and how exactly does time travel work anyway. So let's backtrack a little. John Titor was a user account that posted on several internet discussion boards in the years 2000 and 2001, who claimed to be a time traveler from the year 2036, the operative term being claimed to be. The world of 2036, according to Titor's posts, is one devastated by a nuclear war, and because of that, a lot of the technology has been lost. This is a problem because in the year 2038, which is 2 years after the year that he's from, a timeout error is supposed to make all computer systems effectively unusable, which Y2K38 is totally a real concern, by the way, that even today no one really knows what to do about. But to fix this, the government enlists a group of 7 soldiers to travel back in time to the year 1975 to pick up an IBM 5100 computer, which is apparently the only way to solve this problem. One of them was the grandson of one of the inventors of this computer, John Titor himself. Luckily for us, after having accomplished this mission, Titor decided to take a bit of a detour to the year 2000 to grab some personal memorabilia on the way. And even better, in his spare time, he made an account for the forum The Time Travel Institute to answer people's questions about the future, because that's totally what anyone would do when on a secret government time travel mission to save the world. But here's a description he gives of his life in the future. In 2036, I live in Central Florida with my family, and I'm currently stationed at an army base in Tampa. The people that survived grew closer together. Life is centered around the family and then the community. I cannot imagine living even a few hundred miles away from my parents. There is no large industrial complex creating masses of useless food and recreational items. Food and livestock is grown and sold locally. People spend much more time reading and talking together face to face. Religion is taken seriously, and everyone can multiply and divide in their heads. What may have led to Titor's popularity is the sheer level of detail he provides, not only about the future, but even his time machine. Titor posted blueprints of his time machine, which was a quote-unquote stationary mass temporal displacement unit, powered by 2 topspin dual positive singularities, producing a standard offset Tipler sinusoid, which, you know, sure, I don't know how time travel works. Interestingly enough, some of his predictions came somewhat true. For one, this quote. None of the things I've said would be a surprise. They were set in motion 10, 20, even 30 years ago. Are you really surprised to find out that Iraq has nukes now? Or is that just BS to whip everyone into accepting the next war? Keep in mind that this was posted before 9/11 and the US invasion of Iraq, and before anyone even paid attention to Iraq. So it's kind of a good hint at stuff that was actually to come, and certainly doesn't contradict anything. Even more striking, though, is the part about the IBM 5100, the center of John's mission, which would allow future programmers to solve the 2K38 problem. This specific computer was needed because of a debugging feature that it apparently has, but at the time of these posts, no one apparently knew about this feature, and it was only found about later, so John Titor must have actually known something about this computer. Thing is, I say apparently, because this is what many different websites claim, but then I found a Reddit post of actual computer specialists who all agree that this is complete BS and these quote-unquote secret features had been public knowledge since the 80s. So why give Titor any credibility at all? Why take this seriously? Well, here's the thing. Titor actually gives an explanation of why his predictions won't occur exactly as he says. This is where we get into time travel rules, which I personally love this stuff, but it's also super confusing, just a heads up. The big problem with time travel to the past is about changing the past and creating what is called a causal loop. To give an example of that, say that me, a person from the year 2020, travels back in time to the year 1985, which in my case is before I was born. I'm gonna change some stuff, things are different, and basically I never get born. I feel like Back to the Future goes kind of like that. This is where the causal loop comes in. Say I accidentally prevent my birth this way. If I'm never born, then in the year 2020, I'm not around to travel back in time in the first place. So I do get born. But then I travel back again and prevent my birth. But then I'm not around in the present. And this will just go on and on and on. And basically what I'm trying to say is it doesn't work. Like, at all. Your past has to go one specific way for you to be at the point in your life where you time travel in the first place, and you can't really change that. It's literally physically impossible. Okay, Now let's take a breather here, because this is where things get real confusing. If I lost anyone on the way, I'm sorry, but it's only gonna get worse. Because here's the thing, John Titor claims that he can work around the Saul paradox. His version of time travel works out because he goes by the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics. What that means is that basically multiple versions of this universe can exist at the same time, so that when Titor goes back in time, he actually goes to the 1975 of a parallel universe that's completely identical to us. The advantage of that is that he can't erase himself from the future, because his old time limit still exists in his own universe. Every object has to have an origin, and this way, his origin is still around, it's just on a different Earth. So yeah, basically, what Titor really says is that he's from a parallel universe, where everything starting from the year 1975 happened differently, and that's why, if anything doesn't happen the way he says, he has the perfect excuse. But of course, Titor assures his audience that these differences are minimal, and his predictions could still happen in some way. So yeah, with that reasoning, sure, this could all be legit, and if you believe that, more power to you. But for me, this is where the whole story, even when I was 13, kind of falls flat. Like, obviously, things didn't turn out slightly differently than what he states. They just didn't turn out this way at all. We have no second civil war, and the Olympics in 2008 totally happened. Most people think that this is why the whole John Titor mystery had pretty much died down by the 2010s, because none of his predictions came even close to being accurate. And not to ruin the fun of this, but here's a whole bunch more counter evidence I gathered against Titor being legit. One, his time machine is literally described as being in the rear of a car, just like in Back to the Future, which is honestly just really dumb. Two, since we have no World War III, and if we just assume it won't happen in the next 16 years, Titor's mission is pretty much pointless, because the IBM will probably still be around in 2036. 3. No one with the name John Titor exists, even though he says he was born in 1998 and says he barely changed the timeline. And 4. I'm pretty sure Titor is just a shortened version of the word Terminator, and John is kind of a play on John Connor from those movies. With all that in mind though, no one has ever found out who the original John Titor poster was, so all bets are open, I guess. Except we actually might just know, or at least there are two likely suspects, so in the second part for this, let's talk about John Titor's legacy, and see if we can expose the real John Titor. Before we get to part 2, which I accidentally just started playing, I'm gonna play you some music. Our musical act here at the hotel is Dawn Vale with the album Stand of Tide. I really like this album, played this on my Jambalaya next week, and I'm going to play you the song Pulse of Disappearing, and then we'll get back to more John Titor and kind of the investigation that some people did on who's behind this whole thing. And yeah, I think that's where things get really interesting, so stay tuned for that. Next up will be Dawn Vale.
And now I can see.
This is part two of the John Titor mystery here on Look Behind You at the Enigmatic Riverside Hotel show. In the first part, just to recap a little, we were talking about John Titor, who is a self-proclaimed time traveler who used to post on internet forums in the years 2000 and 2001. And in these posts, he made some predictions, which most of them turned out to not come true in the last 20 years. And so in this next part, we are going to try to find out who is actually behind John Titor. And I'm pretty sure with all the sources that we have, we can get pretty close to who's probably behind this, what they're doing now, and how they're kind of, how they've still been trying to give this story some popularity. So in 2001, John Titor made his last forum posts and then seemingly disappeared from the face of the earth. Since then, lots of people, including me, have been wondering whatever happened to the guy. In 2008, an Italian television program named Voyager had a private investigator. The investigator didn't find anyone actually named John Titor, but he did find a for-profit company called the John Titor Foundation, which was founded in 2003. The CEO of this company is reportedly an entertainment lawyer named Larry Haber from Kissimmee, Florida, where there's also a PA box registered to it. In 2010, this group of friends made a 13-part documentary series where they investigate all sorts of aspects around the John Titor story. These are all uploaded on their YouTube channel, which is simply called Where is John Titor? In the first three episodes, they investigate this PO box, but it doesn't lead to much. Here is an excerpt of that.
Here we go.
Yeah, sure. This is it. This is it. United States Post Office.
Oh, that's a big one.
Alright.
What's the number?
Okay, so we're in the post office
47.
Right now.
47.
I have it down here. 24. It's 470171. 470171 is the post office number. So here we are. We actually have post office boxes.
42. Oh, this is 42.
This is 42.
423.
Are you kidding me? It doesn't even go that high. It doesn't even go that high.
Here you go. This is the highest one. 42354.
42354 is the highest one.
Oh, it's not here.
It's not even here. We didn't find anything. So, the consensus be that we came all the way out here to Kissimmee. We followed all the leads that we were supposed to follow. We went to all these different mailboxes, and in the end, never found this P.O. Box number. 470171. And this is supposed to belong to John Haber. And this particular post office didn't even have it. The numbers didn't even go that high.
So the P.O. box that is the smoking gun to John Titor doesn't even exist in the post office box. So you tell me, right?
Has this hoax been hunted?
I mean, I don't understand how this guy can say that this is the proof when it doesn't even exist. I mean, he's daring people to go out and look for it to say, hey, here it is, and then it's not there. So, I don't know.
All right, well.
YouTube, here we come. Like, right?
Right now, it's just one of the many steps that's going to find Bigfoot and find out that Bigfoot is just a bunch of guys. Or it's really one step to find this John Titor guy, who's a real time traveler from 2036. And I feel that if we really want to look into this more, I think it's like going down the rabbit hole.
Eventually, they actually get to interview Larry Haber, and in those interviews, Haber claims that he is not John Titor, but then it's never made clear why he's the CEO of this company that's clearly related to the whole John Titor story. And then things get even more confusing when this part comes up.
Okay, so is it true that you're an attorney for a woman who claims to be the mother of John Titor, a time traveler?
That's correct.
Oh, have you ever met this woman before?
I have, but I have nothing that I can use or verify anything to anybody.
You can't tell us what she looks like?
Hey guys, I don't know who I'm speaking with at iView, but this is Larry Haber. Regarding the interview I gave you, I need you guys to do me a favor, please. I recall one of the questions you asked me was about John's mom, and right after that, I need you to delete everything I said about get rid of all of that, and we'll be okay. Thank you.
So, according to this, Larry Haber, as a lawyer, defended a woman claiming to be John Titor's mom, which these guys just bring up completely out of nowhere. I don't know what this is about, and honestly, the more you follow down this whole Larry Haber route, the more confusing it gets, especially since he seems to kind of believe that John Titor is real.
And there's a video in 2005, and also is there a departure video of John leaving in 2001?
There is a departure video. I can't talk much more about it. I know that they also want to release that to make sure people understand that this is real and that John was here. I've seen it once. It looks real to me. I don't know anything more about it.
So it seems like things just get more and more confusing from this point on. So I'm just going to present you my theory. When I found this Where is John Titor YouTube channel that did this interview, I actually thought it was satire at first because the videos just seem that staged. The people behind this channel are from a video production company named Iceview Media, which they actually say openly in these videos. And this also explains why their production value is so high. And what they mostly seem to do, normally, is actual video productions for actual clients. So I guess what we're supposed to believe here is that this was kind of a passion project for them that they just decided to do on their own. Now, 2 years ago, a Reddit user named Gaze Upon Olympus decided to check the addresses they go to when they investigate these PO boxes. And it turns out that what they show in this video is not even the right addresses, which means that they straight up lied about going to these places. Also, according to this user, the actual offices of Iceview Media are suspiciously close to Larry Haber's offices, which makes it very likely that Haber actually hired them for the video. So here's how I think the full story goes. In 2000, Larry Haber makes up the story and posts for John Titor, just for the fun of it. Haber's brother in real life is actually a computer scientist, which explains John Titor's knowledge of the IBM 500. After the story dies down, Haber hires Iceview Media to make the Where is John Titor documentary series, both to clear his name in the stage interviews and also to add elements to the story, such as the supposed video of Titor's departure and the woman claiming to be Titor's mom. I couldn't find any older sources for this whole mom story, by the way, which leads me to think that it was specifically made up for this interview, just to sort of bring up the Titor story again. When making this fake documentary, Haber probably expected it to revitalize the John Titor hype. Ironically, it just kind of didn't work out, despite great production value, because the channel has barely 800 subscribers, and I didn't even know about this until I did my research. And honestly, these videos are quite worth your time. Like, they're very well made, and even if you don't believe in it, the story is just told in a very exciting way. Another effect that this whole project had is that instead of clearing his name, it makes him look even more suspicious, at least if you believe in the fact that the videos are staged. So yeah, that pretty much sums up all the evidence against Haber. I should mention that me and this Reddit user seem to be the only people right now who actually believe that this YouTube channel is a hoax. So if you want to make yourself your own impression of that, you should check out Where is John Titor on YouTube. The most recent addition to the whole John Titor story in general is that in 2018, a multimedia artist named Joseph Matheny said that he worked as a consultant on the John Titor project, which to me is just further confirmation that it's all fabricated. But who knows? Maybe things are just delayed in John Titor's predictions and the second American Civil War is just taking its time. The Olympics in this year are in legitimate danger of being cancelled due to coronavirus, so there's that, I suppose. If you want to know what I think, I personally think that Larry Haber is behind all of this, and this is sort of just a fun project for him, which he tried to revitalize with the documentary. But hey, whatever you want to believe, that's totally your thing. But either way, if you have anything to add to the story, any opinions, comments, or insight that you'd like me to talk about next week, or maybe if you're listening, John, I could always use some future advice. Please email that to me to the address riversidehotel20@gmail.com. I have to say, when I started this research, I had remembered the whole John Titor story as being way more believable. So I thought I could actually get much more out of the mystery behind it. Which maybe just shows like how your perspective changes on this kind of stuff as you grow older. And to a certain extent, I kind of admire those people who can still believe in this kind of stuff so easily. Because, like, I feel like I've become way more skeptical. And maybe that's a good thing in many aspects of life, but it also kind of ruins the fun of this whole thing. Like, I feel like I need more elaborate conspiracy theories now. But either way, I had a lot of fun sharing what's one of my favorite conspiracy theories with you, and I hope you enjoyed me rambling about it. And with that, I send you back to the lobby. Yeah, that about sums up the whole John Titor case. As I said, I had a lot of fun making this almost 20 minutes long summary of the whole story. And yeah, in general, with this whole mystery segment, I had a lot of fun. And I think that's what I want to do more of in this show. The whole thing where I can, like, investigate stuff and give you a good summary of these kinds of events. Again, as previously mentioned, if you have any feedback for this show or you just want to join in on the conversation, you can do so by sending me an email. The address is riversidehotel20@gmail.com. And yeah, that's about it for this episode. Next up will be SFU Ideas and Issues. Today with a segment about International Women's Day. So that should be interesting. If you want to hear more from me, you can tune in again next week, every Tuesday at 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. And also, I do a music show tomorrow, which is Jambalaya at 3 p.m. If you like sort of indie rock, alternative rock, then tune into that. And yeah. As I said, next up, SFU Issues and Ideas. And I will see you tomorrow or next week, depending on where you tune in.